This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to this episode of Market Talk for the month of July. In this programme, we'll be asking where next for US interest rates? Why is UK inflation potentially more problematic than elsewhere in the West? And what's China's weakening currency telling us about its economy? So, asking the question is me, Frances Watson, and providing us with all the answers, Chris Jeffrey, Head of Rates and Inflation Strategy at LGIM. And I have to say, Chris, a great big thank you to you for standing in for Ben at the last minute, who couldn't make this particular episode of Market Talk. So thanks to you, and hello.
Hello, Frances. Hello, everybody who's listening. And thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to see you. Thanks for joining. So should we just start by chatting through some recent data points, Chris, especially in the US, where we had, of course, those US CPI data showing both headline and core inflation coming down, and equity and bond markets seem to like that print.
Yeah, I mean, equity and bond markets loved that print. I mean, I guess the big picture here is we've been grappling with a high inflation problem everywhere for what feels like a very, very long time now. And finally, we're getting some good news. So core inflation below expectations, but the details also soft. So the super core measure, which the Fed have been guiding us to look at, so services excluding housing at 0% month on month. And you've got to go back to early 2021 to find those kind of weak numbers. A few more prints like this, and we'll be rapidly talking about the US inflation spike in the past tense, which would be a big relief for investors.
That will be a change. And of course, US payroll data that we had, that was softer too. And I'm just wondering, is this sort of a bit of a game changer? Could this be, I know it's really early days, but could this be a bit of a game changer, especially for the beleaguered bond market, do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, the inflation data more than the payroll data. I mean, the payroll data is really just sort of more of the same. That yes, it was marginally below expectations, but we created a couple of 100,000 jobs last month. That's pretty much where the average has been over the last 6 months. Not really many signs emerging of cracks in the labour market in terms of the much anticipated kind of recession appearing. On the inflation side, yeah, it is generally new information. I mean, what's the phrase? One swallow doesn't a summer make. And we're not there yet. But this is the kind of thing we need to see. We need to see kind of core inflation pressure come down. We've got more wage data coming in the next few days. We'd like to see that kind of come down to levels that are sustainable and in line with the Fed's target over the long run. Because if we continue to get numbers which are not in line with their target, then they have one big policy instrument to use and they'll use it. So we'll continue to be talking about higher rates at the short end, more pressure on bond markets, more pressure on interest rate sensitive assets.
I guess in the summer, the great and the good all get on their jets and start travelling to see each other. And recently we've had Secretary Yellen's visit to Beijing, haven't we? Designed, I think, to calm the waters, really, Chris, on the trade and investment front between the two nations. Did she do that, do you reckon?
Yes, in the short term, no, in the long term. So the yes is clearly these kind of great power meetups where they don't end in big disagreement are quite healthy. They're a sign that there is a sort of working business relationship that can exist beyond the ideology. There's a trough in the tensions, but we just don't think that underlying superpower tension is going to disappear. I mean, that's there for the long run, unfortunately.
So with a bit more talk and not much action is what you're saying?
Yes, but not much action is good, right? Investors kind of worry when there's action, when we have talk of sanctions and tariffs and things that actually interrupt cash flows. Yeah, talk but not action is probably quite a sort of healthy equilibrium for the market to be able to cope with.
Okay, well, look, let's talk now about the current market views. And what we've seen recently, as I understand it, is gilt underperformance relative to peers. They've underperformed for a lot of reasons, mainly outlined by a governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, saying inflation is stubbornly high. What's our house view of gilts, Chris, at the moment?
Yeah, we're pretty comfortable that the sell-off is now big enough to have created opportunities. We think that's most obvious if you're just kind of thinking about what's priced in right at the front end of the curve. So what are kind of expectations for policy rates that are embedded? Come off a bit in the last few days, but that was priced at 6.5% until very recently. We just think that's too high to be delivered without causing really significant collateral damage in the housing market and the broader economy. The last MPC minutes where they raised by 50 basis points. Remember, they sort of surprised the market with that 50 basis point increase. They were very careful to say that this was required at this particular meeting, was the kind of quote that they used. So, you know, reluctant to be embracing that as the new normal pace of rate hikes. I guess the other point here is that the government continues to sort of hold the line for now on fiscal discipline. So we're kind of getting headlines, you know, every day about public sector pay settlements and how they're going to be funded. And the government's line thus far has been very kind of clear that they're going to have to be funded out of the existing budget envelope rather than from new money. So not by printing more gilts for private sector investors to buy. I think that's quite important. So we think we're overpriced at the short end, and we think that the fiscal discipline is there, and we've had that big sell-off relative to other markets. That combination just leaves us pretty constructive on gilts from here.
Okay, interesting. It's been a rough old ride for bond investors for much of the year, hasn't it? I mean, credit spreads seem to have remained relatively tight. Is that something to do with issuance?
So it's not that unusual a development that credit spreads tend to tighten when government bond yields rise, and they tend to widen when government bond yields fall. So it's not too surprising in the context of just the yield move. I'd say the thing that we think is a bit more surprising about credit spreads is the lack of compensation for recessionary risks. So if we look at US investment grade in particular, which sort of tends to then be the thing that kind of drives the rest of the global markets, given that the US is so big, you know, we have credit spreads being below median. So irrespective of the kind of where we are in the cycle, we have a less than median compensation for taking on that credit risk. You listen to our economists speak, and they have a pretty gloomy outlook for the next 6 to 12 months in terms of the increase in unemployment that they see coming, the increase in corporate delinquencies and bankruptcies that they already see in the micro data. So, yeah, I mean, the thing that surprises us most, I guess, is that lack of compensation for the downgrade and default risk. And as a consequence of that, on the multi-asset team, Elgin, we don't have a particularly constructive view on credit. I don't think many of the credit teams have particularly kind of constructive views right now. So kind of all looking for, most looking for some kind of additional increase in credit spreads from here.
So is it fair to say then they're tracking the path of equities more than they are bonds
yes,
at the moment?
Yes,
absolutely. And is that always the case then?
I guess credit investors like to split up the return on credit into the excess return split up the total return into the excess return, which is the compensation over and above equivalent maturity government bonds, and that which accrues to the government bonds themselves. That excess return typically, and this is more true as you get sort of further down the risk spectrum, but that excess return typically has a very predictable relationship with what's going on in the equity market. So high yield credit in particular, you know, tends to trade up and down with equities. Investment grade maybe a little bit more idiosyncratic, but it's not that unusual that the excess return on credit is something that moves around with the equity market.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up for me. Now, from equities then to currencies, and we've got a weak renminbi trading against a weakening dollar, which is really reflective of the state of China's economy, isn't it?
Yes, so I make a couple of comments about the renminbi. So the first is that, you know, we kind of started this talk with talking about US CPI coming down and that being a positive surprise for investors. We also had Chinese CPI over the course of the last week. Chinese CPI is 0% year on year. I mean, we kind of may find that quite surprising sitting in, or for those listeners sitting in the UK, about a kind of high inflation environment. I mean, China is on the cusp of printing kind of deflationary numbers. So I think that's the sort of underlying driver here, that there's very low inflation in China. We've seen none of the pickup in Chinese interest rates that we've seen in the West. And that widening interest rate differential has been the thing that's been driving the currencies. So like, I guess there's a sort of background question, well, why is that? Why haven't we seen inflation so weak? And why have we seen rates stay so low? And I think that is your point, that it's reflective of the weakness, particularly in housing and broader construction in the Chinese economy, that we haven't seen the same kind of bounce post their pandemic reopening that we've seen elsewhere. And China's generally, you know, it's struggling. If you look at Chinese assets, some of them are remaining kind of supported by the hopes that because China is struggling, stimulus is around the corner. So yeah. Chinese equities sort of treading water for the last couple of months, despite that kind of weakness in the data, which I think really just sort of speaks to those sort of investor expectations that the cavalry are coming in the form of some kind of stimulus program. About a week ago, the Chinese premier recommitted to the 5% growth target for this year. We think that that's going to be quite difficult for them to hit unless they sort of try and sort of draw a line under the deterioration that we're seeing now by announcing something. We just sort of don't really have a good feel for what order of magnitude and exactly where it's going to be focused. But we're pretty confident that something is coming to underpin that 5% growth target.
Well, where are we as a house, Chris, just on the GDP front for China?
So our emerging markets economists have had a great call all year. They've been below consensus on expectations for Chinese GDP, I think just above 5%. And we've seen kind of a decline in consensus expectations pretty consistently down towards where they are now. So, you know, they've been standing still and sort of everybody else has been marking down towards those numbers.
All right. Now, so let's look at what's on the agenda then the next couple of days. And of course, we are in Q2 earnings season and big banks announcements on Friday. I think JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Citibank all announcing. Gosh, it seems a long time ago since that March banking crisis. Will we be seeing any indications of a hit to lending?
Well, that's, I think, what the market's going to be looking for. Are we seeing any signs of tightening credit conditions? We kind of expect it from the aftermath of that episode in March. We expect it from survey data that's kind of published once a quarter, the senior loan officer survey in the US, kind of indicating tightening credit conditions. But, you know, when the rubber hits the road, are we actually going to start seeing it in the sort of banks reporting? I think that's one place to look. Another place to look is going to be how rapidly are we seeing banks' liabilities reprice? So we know that depositors have kind of woken up a little bit in March and moving money around, both because of concerns about, in certain cases, about bank solvency. But also, I mean, the main story is kind of woken up to the fact that there's 5% plus interest rates available on money market funds. So over the course of Q2, we've seen another $300 billion move into US money market funds. And the question is like, well, where's it come from? So it's likely come from one of the banks and we're going to find out who. I guess a comment on earnings season more broadly, that analysts are going into this looking for something like -7% year on year earnings growth. The analysts are almost always too pessimistic because they get guided down in advance of earnings season. So I think the market benchmark in terms of, you know, what's the number that we'll be looking for to see whether the market takes a sort of positive or negative steer on earnings overall is going to be around zero. So a sort of 6 to 7% beat relative to analyst expectations is actually pretty standard.
When you say that, Chris, is that for the S&P 500, those
yes,
earnings?
Yes, that's right. That's the S&P.
Okay, fine. All right. Now, the other thing that's going on, apparently, the ongoing talks re the establishment of European fiscal rules. Now, as I understand it, these were suspended, of course, on it during the pandemic and have not yet been reimposed. Some countries, i.e. not Germany and the rest, will be quite happy about that. But what should we be expecting in the small print?
Well, they can't carry on forever with no fiscal rules because the European treaty requires them. And it's been sort of emergency escape clause that's allowed them to suspend them. And then this is the sort of fight around exactly what form they take and how onerous they are. The things that don't seem to be changing is the long-run commitment to a 3% deficit and sort of somewhat laughably a 60% debt to GDP ratio. And I say somewhat laughably because it used to be only Italy who was missing that by by 100 miles. But now, you know, France and Spain have debt ratios of 115%. So to have a target of 60 is pretty meaningless. But we do need a framework, and it is important for the market because the ECB's bond buying program that was introduced and has never been used. So the TPI, the transmission protection instrument, the sort of vehicle that was designed to kind of calm market nerves around Italy, is reliant on countries being in compliance with the EU's fiscal framework and not subject to an excessive deficit procedure. At the moment, there is no fiscal framework and excessive deficit procedures have been suspended, but they have to come back. And that's why it matters. And another kind of European downturn is likely to bring all of these old sort of worries back to the surface again. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the fiscal framework will be important.
Let's hope it's not a repeat of, when was it, 2011?
Yes.
Dark days.
Lot of sleepless nights in 2011.
Yeah, I bet. So look, let's go from Europe just quickly to India, where we have a G20 finance meeting, I think. What's going on there?
So priority items here, climate financing and sustainable development goals. So on climate financing, it's about sort of thinking about a global response, really, to what's happened in the US with the Inflation Reduction Act, throwing quite large subsidies at certain industries key to the energy transition. And then on the sustainable development goals, I mean, that's just going to be quite depressing reading, unfortunately, that relative to when the goals were set, there's something like an additional 90 million people living in extreme poverty after the pandemic worldwide, and a staggering 150 million children worldwide have missed more than a year of in-person education. So the kind of sustainable development goals were kind of a clear framework to try to get us to a more sustainable future by 2030. That report card is looking very, very bad as a consequence of the pandemic. And I think this is an opportunity for the G20 finance ministers to reset and redouble their efforts to achieving those goals.
Yeah, I mean, it's a stark reminder, isn't it, that the scars of the pandemic are still with us, and particularly in developing countries. All right, so let's go from depressing to optimistic, I'm sure. And we always end these podcasts, Chris, as you probably may know, with a number for the week. So I'm going to ask you, what's your number for the week and why have you chosen it?
My number for the week is zero. Zero is an interesting number for lots of reasons, which I'm not going to get into conceptually. But zero is Chinese CPI growth year on year is zero. US super core inflation, so services excluding housing, printed zero month on month for the first time in a long, long time. And that's probably the best piece of news that investors could have hoped for.
Great. Well, that's lovely and succinct. And of course, we are 100% grateful for you, Chris, to keep the Market Talk going. We'll, of course, be back with Ben in August. But for now, thank you for your time. And thank you to all our listeners for listening. Thank you. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers.
This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.